Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
You are listening to Metal Shop's Backstage Pass.
Hey, what's going on? It's Metal Shop. I'm talking with Thomas Youngblood from the band Camelot. You've probably seen them several times in Seattle, but that was before the pandemic. They have a new live album proving that they are kick-ass live. I Am the Empire live at the 013. It's available on Napalm Records. First off, welcome to the show. How are you doing today? How have you been the last few months, rather?
What's happening, Kevin? We're doing good, actually, considering everything. You know, normally we would be writing at this point, so
okay.
We're kind of fortunate compared to a lot of bands that have normally been touring at this juncture. But we're doing good. We're focusing on writing for the new record and promoting the live CD and DVD Blu-ray, and it's been awesome. I mean, the response to this release has been, you know, beyond my expectations. So the timing's obviously really good for it, since there's nothing going on for live shows, and not that we planned it that way, but we're kind of fortunate, I think, in that aspect.
Well, that's actually a good point. Is I didn't think about it that way. Is like there's no live shows, so if you want an actual like immersive live show, you can buy the Blu-ray or buy the CD and just kind of close your eyes or open them if you're at the Blu-ray, drink a beer, and just, you know, imagine you're there at a Camelot show, which is as best as we can do right now, which is a positive.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we definitely tried to kind of capture that sense of being there, whether it's like the audio or the visuals. I mean, it's tough times for everybody, and I hope that for at least, you know, for Camelot fans or fans that are just finding out about the band, that this is something that that helps, you know.
Absolutely, man. So you said that you're kind of in the thick of like recording right now. Can you give us a hint as like maybe just a couple words as what we can expect?
Well, it's pretty exciting. I mean, we've never had this much time to work on new songs, probably in the last 10 years. So it's
cool.
We had like ideas for 25 different songs, but we've whittled that down to like 13, 14 songs. And it's a lot of good music, I think, you know, and I can say that because I'm not writing it all, so it doesn't sound conceited, but, you know, Tommy, our singer, has been writing a lot, our keyboard player, Oliver, we've just all been collaborating together on it. It's exciting. We're not sure if it's going to be a concept record yet or not, but that's stuff that we're talking about right now.
Cool, man. Well, I'm stoked to hear it, and I'm curious about, you know, you did mention that it's like hard times for all of us and everything. Aside from the band, you know, aside from music, and when you're, I'm assuming you probably have a lot of, or at least more free time now. How have you been staying sane as far as like your personal like time and your own? Are you reading books? You doing art? Or are you just kind of watching movies? What have you been doing to stay busy and sane?
Well, I mean, I have been working on new music, but also, you know, I have a family, so I've been actually spending a lot of time with family, which I, you know, more time than I normally would, which has been great.
Yeah.
You know, my kids are into a lot of sports, so I've been doing a lot of things with them in their sports and everything, and just being a dad, it's been awesome, actually. And I think it's been good to kind of recharge my battery. So this whole thing, outside of obviously the economic and the lives that have been lost, the whole thing has been kind of good for me in terms of, you know, you having a little bit of a break. So when things come back around, and probably in mid-2021, whenever hopefully we can start touring again, it's going to be, everybody's going to have their batteries recharged for the next round.
Oh, man. And that first like round of shows and those first shows, people are going to be so stoked to see live music.
Yeah. They'll be as stoked as we are, because we're dying to play again, you know?
Absolutely, man. I bet. Yeah, that's going to be awesome. Now, I wanted to talk a little bit about maybe like your early days of like growing up and what got you into music. I was curious, like, what was the first like kind of light bulb moment where you heard rock and roll music, or, you know, just music in general? And what was like the first band for you that did that?
Yeah, I mean, I moved to Tampa when I was like 12, 13, and then I started getting into metal like probably around 14, 15. And I like bands like Maiden and Priest, and then a local band called Avatar, which eventually became Sabotage.
Yeah.
We used to go see, and they were kind of like that was the band that I said, okay, they're doing this outside of the U.S. If I want to start a band, I have a good role model here in terms of like they've done it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of used them as my role model in terms of going, okay, you know, obviously musically they weren't such a big influence, but just in terms of like being a band from Tampa, that was like huge for me to see that I can do something more than just play at a local bar or something, you know. So that was probably the light bulb moment, was kind of seeing this band get signed to Atlantic and then, you know, move on from there. You know, what's happened with Sabotage, eventually they basically became Trans-Siberian Orchestra, really. So that was kind of cool, you know, at least that was a great influence. Also, Crimson Glory was a big influence on us in the early days, since they were also from Tampa. And all of those guys in those bands, including Saigon Kick, I'm now really good friends of mine, which is kind of cool.
Hell yeah, man. So I'm curious, maybe if you could mention a few albums that made like a positive impact on your life growing up.
Yeah, I mean, for sure, Yngwie's Rising Force was
okay.
Massive to me. Number of the Beast from Iron Maiden. Anything from Queen, pretty much, other than maybe The Game. I loved Queen growing up, Kansas, bands like that, Rush. There's just so much. I mean, I was just soaking all this stuff up as a kid, you know, or young adult, whatever. But, I always encourage, even, you know, my kids as well, is like, listen to all kind of music. Don't just listen to one genre.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter likes the Beatles. She's 17. She likes the Beatles. She likes Louis Armstrong. She likes pop music, AJR. So it's really cool. I think it just lends itself to having an open mind about not just music, but, you know, life in general.
You know, it keeps you well-rounded. What was the first time that you, as far as like becoming a guitarist, did your parents buy you a guitar? Did you save up money to buy yourself a guitar? And what was your first guitar?
Actually, it was a Christmas present. My cousin worked at a music store here in Tampa. I moved to Tampa when I was younger because of my father passed away. So I was living with my aunt.
Yeah.
And her daughter worked at a music store. And that's what I got. I think I was like 14 or 15. I got this guitar. And before that, I played saxophone. So guitar was way cooler.
Yeah.
And it just kind of went from there. I invested in some recording gear back then and a drum machine, and pretty much learned a few things like Iron Maiden songs. But then I started writing my own songs pretty quickly. And that, I think that was, you know, that was the genesis of what was to come.
Right on, man. Okay. Well, now that we kind of have a little bit of background, I want to curveball here. What is one album or something that you love that like the average Camelot fan would be surprised that you're into?
I really like the latest Avicii record.
Okay.
It's called Tim, I think. It was songs that he was working on before he died.
Mm-hmm.
And then some collaborators kind of finished it. I love that record.
Some EDM,
I guess that would probably surprise some people. But, I mean, the chords and the melodies are there, you know, regardless of the... that's what songs are, you know, these chords and vocal melodies, whether you have, like, an EDM beat underneath that or a double bass drum beat.
Yeah.
This is a song, and then... But it's something about the... I love the way the chords that he uses on some of the songs.
All right, so I'm curious. We all know what they claim was the big four of American thrash metal: Anthrax, Slayer, Metallica, Megadeth. Aside from Camelot, in your opinion, what is the big four of power metal?
Aside from Camelot?
Or you can include Camelot in there if you want.
Big four power metal. I mean, you got to bring, I guess, Halloween probably, Stradivarius. Those two are the only two that come to mind, obviously. I mean, maybe my buddies in Dragon Force. I can't think of any other bands from that. I'm sure I'm totally
Manowar?
Missing somebody. Manowar's not power metal to me. They're more I don't know what you call that. I wouldn't call them power metal. I mean, Sabaton's probably power metal, so maybe Sabaton.
Fair enough. Well, let's throw Camelot in there for fair measure. That's a question. Like, do you consider, if you don't consider Manowar, and you obviously, you know, you've had a lot of experience with this, do you consider Camelot a power metal band, or do you?
I don't actually.
Okay.
But we get termed that term all the time, so. I consider Camelot a symphonic metal band, but we have influences of power metal for sure.
Okay.
We have progressive influences. We have, you know, straight rock influences. So when I think of straight power metal, though, I mean, a band like Halloween, they kind of do their thing, and that's what they do. And there's not much, you won't find like a piano ballad on a Halloween record, I don't think. You know, stuff like that we do that I think makes us not straight power metal.
That's a good point, man. It's good to have that distinction there. So appreciate you kind of breaking that down for me. I got one last question for you. And if you could, pick a scar on your body and tell us the story of how you got it. Again, we're talking with Thomas Youngblood from Camelot.
Yeah, well, I actually have a scar on my right wrist that was one vein away from my lifeline. I had broken a glass window when I was 10 years old because I fell on my bike and I went to knock on the door. It was locked and nobody answered the door. So I put my fist through it and almost like a triangle, the glass went straight down and cut my wrist and blood was all over the ceiling of the patio. And then we rushed to the hospital and there was towels wrapped around my arm.
God,
like,
damn.
Probably like a foot deep, and you could still see the blood coming through it. I remember that like it was yesterday.
That's so brutal.
But I have a lot of scars, so that's one of them.
Can you still see it pretty prevalently?
Oh yeah, you can still see the scar on my wrist.
This has been Metal Shop's Backstage Pass. You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free, so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.